These will be the memoirs of Mrs. R.L. Cooper of Robstown, a native of South Texas, for many, many years.
My family moved from Corpus Christi to a ranch in near Alice, Magnolia Ranch, in 1915. This ranch is not located 9 miles southeast of Alice, and it's bordered on the south by King Ranch. The roads were all dirt roads, and it's from Alice to the ranch. You had to go through four gates, open and close them every trip. We moved into a large one-story ranch house. There were 5 bedrooms, a living room, dining room, kitchen, and bath. No running water, a hall down the center of the house. Only Mexican farmers and 2 white families lived on this ranch, and there was a country school with 1 teacher. My father had cattle and horses. Later, he had a dairy. In 1916, we had a hurricane. There was not too much damage to the houses, but we lost most of the trees in our yard. I was in charge of this dairy that my daddy built in 1918 and 1919. We milked 60 cows by hand. I milked from 4 to 16 every morning and evening. Then I helped my brother separate the milk and then bucket fed from 30 to 40 calves each time. There were no paved roads in the little city of Alice. Most of the stores were in 3 blocks, plus side street or 2. The stores that I can remember were George Hobbs Grocery and Dry Goods, where we bought our groceries and our dry goods. And his brother, Phil, had a hardware store. It was the Eagle Pharmacy, where we bought our medicines. The Alice State Bank and Trust Company, Citizen State Bank, where my father did his business, a Brown Fuller Hardware, Joe Bessie Jeweler, Glover John Ford Company, Alamo Lumber Company, Alice Cotton Oil Company, an ice plant, and the Walker Feed Store. Of course, there were others, but these are the ones I remember. That there were 2 doctors that I remember, Dr. Strickland and Dr. Camel, and our dentist, Dr. Watts, who we visited regularly. During the school year of 1918, my brother, sister, and I drove to Alice, where I was a senior. Our daddy had bought us a new Ford touring car. We had lots of rainy weather, and even with chains, we had to get out and push out of mud holes quite often. Of course, there were the 4 gates that had to be open and closed every day. I graduated from high school that year. In 1921, the Magnolia Schoolhouse was moved about 5 miles west of our house to the Doring Farm. I taught there during 1921 and 22. We had pie suppers and box socials and so forth to get money for to buy an old organ so that I could play songs for the children to sing. At several of these box suppers, some of the boxes sold for as high as $40. This was the year that the first oil well in that vicinity was drilled, and it was drilled about 1/2 mile from our schoolhouse. It turned out to be a dry hole. We never spent much time in Alice, as we were always doing something at the ranch, work, play, or company. But when we did go in, our daddy always treated us to a vanilla nut sundae at an old-fashioned ice cream store. In February 1918, I went out to take mail to the men working on a new dairy barn, and there I met the man I was to marry 6 years later. Stop. We had a Sunday school in this schoolhouse, and Raymond from Alice came out every other Sunday. About 30 would attend the Sunday school, and we would have Sunday school class and then preaching. And some of these people would drive from even 10 miles away to come to services on Sunday afternoon. And then about the latter part of 1919, my family started going to church at Alice, so the Sunday didn't have a Sunday school anymore. And when I taught this school at Doring Ranch, I had 42 school children, and they were in grades 1 to 7. And I still keep contact with several of these students that I had then, and we correspond, and I visit them every once in a while. At the box suppers that we had at the church, at school, we would have, people would bring their boxes, and one time when they went to sell them, a friend came to my sister and asked which was my box. Since I was a school teacher, they wanted to run it high, and she made a mistake and didn't tell her the right box, so when the boy bought the box and paid the $40, it wasn't my box, but it disturbed him considerably. And a pie supper, pies went from a price of about $2.50 to $8. And we have some games, and several times during the year there would be large parties, and we'd have refreshments and play some game, old-fashioned games. When I when we lived there in Kingsville, well, one fall in Alice, an early fall, it became so dry and the mesquite beans were gone. So my father felt like the cattle had to be moved, and he made arrangements to move them to Kerrville. And the night before they were to be moved, he announced to our children that we were going to go along, and of course we were elated. And that night we had big rain, and we didn't get to make the trip. Of course, we were all disappointed. Now, there's a story told when I was a girl that God made the mesquite trees to have a lot of beans on them the year that would be a drought. And whenever there was a lot of mesquite beans, we would look for a dry year. And these beans would be what the cattle would eat when there wasn't any grass. There was a lot of mesquite brush. There were tall trees and a lot of running mesquite. Some of the pastures were nearly impossible in parts to get through on account of the running mesquite. This 1919 storm, which lasted about at least 36 hours, took the front porch off of our house and completely destroyed the dairy barn, and my father went out of the dairy business. That day, that morning, I usually baked the bread for our family. I baked 12 large loaves of bread. And when the storm got so bad during the night, the Mexicans and farmers who lived on our ranch came up to our house because they were afraid. And I figure about 20 people came, and they sat in our chairs, and the chairs were, what did I say they were? Well, anyhow, they all got wet and the bottoms came out of them. But they ate all 12 loaves of bread, and we spread them out all over the floor for them to sleep. We moved to Kingsville. And when I worked down there for the railroad, one day we had 21 inches of rain. And that morning when I went to work, I worked at the shops. I just got so close and couldn't go any further. The water was too deep. And the switch engine drove by, and they stopped and asked me, did I want to go to work? And I told them, yes. And they said, there's nobody down there but just your two bosses so far. So they picked me up, literally picked me up, put me on the engine, and delivered me right at the door. Now that's all.
How long ago was that? About 19?
Was about 22, I think. 22. One day the officers came up to our house and said they were looking for one of our farmers. And he went down to the house where he lived and went out and checked his livestock and found a mule with cloven foot. So he arrested the man, took him in, accusing him of having cut the fence, the King Ranch fence, and going onto the King Ranch and killing a King Ranch cow. And the mark showed that the wagon was pulled by two animals, and one of them had a cloven foot. But when my daddy returned from Kingsville, he went to Alice, he was on Kingsville on business, he went to Alice, and the Mexican man was released, and nothing further came of it. I can't remember whether they found somebody else who had the cloven-footed animal or not. Now let's see what the other one I'm supposed to tell you about.
Driving the hogs?
My daddy had a number of hogs to take to market, and the only way, of course, that we could take them then was in a wagon, that they had to take them to town was in a wagon. Now, this was 9 miles from town, and he decided the easiest way to do it was there were a number of hogs and that he would drive them. And he had a bunch of the men, including the man that I married, went along with him, and as they came to any water hole, of course the hog was tired, got tired and hot, they'd just literally pile into this hole just as deep as they could, pushing each other out. And of course some of them were so fat and got too hot, and they had to be picked up and put in the wagon and carried into town. And it was more than a day's job. It took them more than a day to drive them those 9 miles.
Did you take them into Alice?
Yeah, I took them to Alice and shipped them out. I guess Kansas City, I would know where.
Where was the shipping depot then?
Yeah, it was close to where the old station was, someplace right there. The Pancho Villa scare happened during 1916 to 1918, and since we were so close to the border line over at Alice, people became very frightened, and the King Ranch were so disturbed because they were losing cattle to some of the raiders, and I'm sure that other people were killing the cattle or stealing the cattle and was put off on these raiders, that they put up a large searchlight on top of, I believe it was on the ranch mansion, and during the night, every night, it just swung around just regularly. It would shine right in our bedroom. My folks, my father's and mother's parents and all their relatives lived in Illinois, and they would read in the newspapers about what Pancho Villa and his raiders were doing, and they kept writing and telegraphing and telling my daddy to bring the family up there because they were afraid that we were going to be killed right there in our home. Of course, no one ever got as far north as our place, but there were very, very disturbing, it was very disturbing news. I'm sure you've heard the story where a few years ago that someone saw a vision on the side of a water tower, a wooden water tower, a water tank between Alice and San Diego. This water tower was on the property of the parents of three of the girls that I taught in school on the Doring Ranch. And the mother had died, and the three daughters were living away, and one of the middle daughter had bought the property from her other two sisters. And it was when she read the story in the paper, she went out to see if it was really on her land. And she found there a lot of little shacks put up where people were taking advantage of those who were coming to see the water tower and see if they could see this vision too. And there were some markings on the water tower because we went and looked, but we couldn't see the vision in the markings. But they were selling these mementos or charms to people and taking advantage of them in every way. For the day that we went, things had quieted down, but you could see where all the grass and the weeds and had just been level from where cars had parked to check to see if they could come to see if they could see this vision.
Ms. Cooper, what was travel like around here?
Well, when we lived at Alice and we wanted to go to Kingsville because we did quite a lot of our business down there, we had to go over to the road that runs due south of Alice and went right out through the King Ranch. We had to open at least one or two gates and drove right through the King Ranch by the Little Ranch house and on into Kingsville. Now, in recent years, when we would go along the highway there, you could still see the old trail where the cars had driven. But the last several times that we've been down there, it's grown up and the land has been plowed and grass planted, so you can't see the marks. When along 1920, when some rainy season and the roads were all dirt, and wherever it was black land, it was hard to get through, even with chains. And it became necessary for a doctor to come out or to go after a doctor or necessary to go to another town. The people would take their cars and let most of the air out of the tires and would get right on the railroad tracks and ride the ties to go to the next town or wherever they wanted to go. And this, of course, was a bumpy ride, but you did get there. We moved from New York back to Texas in 1925, and when on our way down, of course there were no highway signs, not too many, much highway, but no highway signs like we have today. And to get here, after we got around St. Louis, we followed a sign on the telephone post where it marked KT, which is King's Trail, and this was the old trail where King family had delivered their cattle to market. old roads that they took when they delivered their cattle to market.
Do you remember anything about the road to Corpus Christi? Did you go there very often?
Well, one time when we lived in Kingsville, we started to Corpus and got as far as Driscoll and had to try and go back because everybody was stuck. There were people stuck all along ahead of us, and we couldn't get around them. And, of course, the road then followed very much from Alice to Corpus, the same route that it does today, but it was all dirt road, and it was just nearly impossible to go over.
What was Corpus Christi like in 1929?
Let's see, when we moved from Corpus in 1915, they had begun to put in pavement, and pavement had come out nearly as far as our house, which was directly across from where Cage Mill's funeral home is. And they had brought it just to Cage Mill's funeral home, and to celebrate it that night they had a dance right there on the highway, on the street, on the paved street. There were very few paved streets though, very, very few. And we rode streetcars most of the time when we wanted to go someplace.
The waterfront in Corpus, of course, the seawall wasn't there. What was the line?
Well, there was the building, and I'm not sure the name. I can't remember the name of it, but I know that my father had a membership in it, and my father and mother used to go out there for meetings, and we went there every once in a while. And the old Epworth League pavilion, small pavilion, was out on North Beach, and of course this was all wiped away by the 1916 storm, and then the 1919 storm got all of it. And all the fishing piers and these big buildings were of course all wiped away by the 1919 storm.
Can you tell us about some of the old buildings and businesses that were in Corpus?
Well, I can't spot the building exactly where they are, but I know that my mother used to trade at Guggenheim Cones, and it was just across the street from catty corner, across the street from where the Nuez Hotel is located now, and directly west of the Nuez Hotel, across the street, it was a City National Bank, and my daddy had his office on the second floor. And he was a real estate man at that time, and this was of course prior to 1915. And whenever a parade would come to town, and they always had the circus once a year, big circus once a year, while we would go up early to town and in a horse and buggy, and horse and carriage, and would go up and look out the windows and see the parade as it went by. I can't remember too many of those stores. But, of course, there was no Basque Bridge. There was no high bridge over the port. There was no causeway at that time. And when we wanted to cross to out onto North Beach, there was just a small bridge wooden bridge, just like there are bridges over other little rivers or creeks now. And then when we got out I never went across, but you could go across from North Beach to Portland, and in a horse and buggy. And of course, there was no bridge. You went in a horse and buggy. You went at low tide, and there were posts up for markers, and you followed from one post to the other because this was where the water was shallow.
What was North Beach like then? Was it a big tourist attraction?
Well, they didn't have motels. Of course, there weren't any such things as motels, but they had a big swimming pool. This swimming pool that's the same one that's been there for a long time now. I guess it's gone now, but it has been changed some. But we swam in it as children. And the old Breakers Hotel was built while we were there, and my daddy and my mother went to many a real estate meeting or supper out there at the Breakers Hotel.
That was quite a show place back then.
Yeah, it was. This was one of the finest buildings there at the time it was built.
Were there many well-known people that stayed there that you can remember?
I don't remember that. But we had many friends who lived out there on North Beach, and after the 1919 storm, when we'd go out riding, or after we were married, I could even go by and tell my husband, well, such and such a person lived here. They were real good friends of ours, and I visited their home many times, and all you could see left would be their concrete doorsteps.
You were talking about going to Portland area. Was the railroad trestle in then, and did this where y'all used to go follow the trestle?
No, the railroad trestle was there because about every other year, my daddy and mother would take us up to Illinois to visit the relatives, and we went out that way. But the stakes were still further west of where the causeway is located today. For a number of years, those stakes were still there. Of course, they're all gone now.
Well, you also went to school in Corpus. Can you tell us where the old school was in Corpus?
Well, when I first started school in Corpus, the children had to be vaccinated, and my daddy would not have me vaccinated because a neighbor who lived next door to us had been vaccinated, and he wouldn't be vaccinated in place but on his leg. He wanted to go to Mexico, and he had to be vaccinated on his leg, and as a direct result of that vaccination, he lost his leg, so my daddy would not have me vaccinated, and I went to private school. And then the next year, my mother says, no private school for my children, they're going to school, so I went to... They built a new school on Staple Street, and it was a two-room school building, and I went there in the first and second grade. In the third grade, there was no room for us, and they moved a little building out in the back, and I went to third grade there. During that year, they built two floors on top of the first and second grade for third and fourth, and I went there in the fourth grade. In the fifth grade, then, there was no room for us, so we went to... old high school building, and I lived across, as I said a while ago, across from Cage Mills, and so on South 2nd, went right over to Tonkaway and went right straight to the high school building, and in the sixth grade, they built the new Edward Furman School, and I went there. Then when I went ready for the seventh grade, there was no room again, so I had to go to the high school building again, the old high school building, which has now been torn down, and the Board of Education have a building there at this time.
What years was this? About 19 what?
Well, I moved away in 15, so 1915 is the year I went in the seventh grade there.
When you were in Corpus in 1912-15, what were the major boundary lines or streets in Corpus?
Well, the streets that I remember well. Of course, there were a few houses and buildings probably on the other side of them. Was Hancock on the south, Staples on the west, Leopard on the north, and the waterfront there's really South Broadway on the east.
Okay, out toward where UCC is now. Did you even get out that far where people live?
Yes, there was, what was the name of that hotel that burned here tonight that San Bernice was born? There was the old... a hotel out there, Flower Bluff. Because my folks went out to Flower Bluff in the cars when relatives came from Illinois, and we have a lot of pictures of them out there. There's nothing there, of course, but deep sand and that one hotel, and I can't remember the name of it, but it burned in 1927.
Okay, what about toward the west? Was there many people living out there, or was it just farmland?
No. Not too many people beyond Staple Street. Maybe a block or two, but no further.
Out toward Chapman Ranch, was there any people living out there?
It was about 1915 or so, I believe, when Chapman Ranch was put in. No, I'm not real certain about the time, but I never had been out there. But you remember the Chapmans came down and built those, had bought that ranch land and then divided in 320 and 640, I believe 160, 320, 640 acreages and built houses, a smaller house on the smaller property. And then brought on people in these land trains.
What do you mean by these land trains?
A group of real estate men from in this section of the country would go up to some of the northern states, Illinois and I don't know, Ohio and in there, and would interest people in coming down and looking this the land over down this, which was new country, and they'd bring whole trains of them, of people down, men and women, couples even sometimes, and they would buy property down here and go back, and of course sometimes they'd pay a little money on it and would become disappointed because they couldn't develop it like they wanted to. They even came down to Riviera and went out along Loyola Beach, and they built these two three-story, what I suppose you'd call rooming houses, and people would come down there and spend the several weeks during the summer, and would go swimming and fishing and just lay along on the beach.
Did they sell much land like that?
Evidently they had to make their money because it would cost something. I don't know how the people paid for their, I suppose they paid their own fare, but they would come down just to look over the lay of the land and see them, and of course a lot of land was sold, because I know my daddy sold a lot that way.
What about other land deals and towns starting in this area?
There was a man named Mr. Freer who lived at Alwaducee and farm land right next to my husband and could not make a go of it, and had to go out and find something else to do, and he went out to and started this new town of Freer on the shoestring, and of course we know now what's developed. There was no oil there or anything at the beginning, and we know that it is not good cattle grazing land or good farming land either, so how he made a go of it there, well, I can understand.
What year was that, do you remember?
Well, let's see, this had to be around 1920.
The little town of Alwaducee, there's two stories about how it got its name. Could you tell us that?
Well, Alwaducee, of course, is Spanish for Sweetwater, and the story is told that as people travel west from Corpus coming out this way, that as they stop to drink and get a drink of water, and of course the original well at Alwaducee was one that was for cattle, a big cattle ranch, and they stopped to drink water, and they say it said it was so much saltier than what they'd had back this way that they called it Alwaducee Sweetwater. And the other story is told that it was really was better water, much better water than they had around this way. So I don't know which story is really true.
About what year would that have been when they were moving into Alwaducee?
Oh, that would have been wrong. I wouldn't know. I'd say about 9 or 10.
1909, 1910.